And opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Good morning, Fairbanks. You are listening to KFAR Radio. We are at 660 on the AM dial, 97.5 on the FM dial, and we live stream at KFARradio.com. Isn't that right, Joni?
It's 100% true.
Our phone number is 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. This is Problem Corner. Your host, David Pruse, is here.
Yay!
And, of course, it's a Wednesday. So last Wednesday, Joni Skillbred bailed on me. She had to go check out some grandkids in Minnesota where it was cooler.
It was wonderful.
So we have her here today. How you doing, Joni?
I'm doing great.
How was your trip?
Fabulous.
Fairbanks, if you could see her radiating about asking about her grandkids. it's wonderful.
It was fabulous. It was over way too fast. I had a week. And I went to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, which is just kind of like being here almost, you know. The climate's kind of like here. It looks kind of like here.
Did you have to fly into Wisconsin to drive over to the Upper Peninsula?
No. I flew to Chicago. Okay. And the UP is hard to get to.
Yeah.
If you fly to the Marquette Airport, I had to sit in Chicago for a long time, both ways, going and coming, to meet connecting flights to get to Alaska.
Whatever made one of your kids move there?
The United States Coast Guard.
Enough said.
Yes.
Enough said. Okay, I understand. Okay.
Service to the country. Even grandmas have to give up for the greater good.
What's our discussion today on?
Well, we're going to have a show. I guess we should have a disclaimer. If you're gluten intolerant, you might want to go elsewhere.
Sit out and realize what you're missing.
We're going to talk about a flour mill that Fairbanks had.
Okay.
And agriculture. It's quite a story. I've always been kind of interested in this, and then when I gathered all the materials for the show today, I went, oh my gosh, was really interesting.
So basically, this is how we got past the sourdough starter.
A sourdough starter you have to have flour for.
Yeah.
Yes. So when people were here, that was one of the things that's like the number one staple you're going to bring is flour.
Yeah.
So that you can have bread. And getting flour to a place like here in the very early days was difficult.
Yeah, and expensive.
And by the time it got here, it was kind of old. Flour does have a bit of a shelf life. And so a better way to go about, which, can you grow that here? I mean, that was my first thought. Can you grow wheat here? And you can, it turns out.
Wheat or weed.
That's a whole different thing.
I know. That's why I throw that at you.
Yes, this isn't the high time show.
It's called the buzz.
Yeah, we'll save that for those guys.
Buzz, yeah, okay.
So, by the time Fairbanks was founded and, up to, like the first 5 or 6 years, you don't really know if you have it went from a camp to a town. And do you have the staying power? Will you be one of these gold camps that blows up like Cleary and then poof?
Yeah, gone.
there's nothing. Live and Good's a great example. Or are you going to be a permanent community that's going to last like Fairbanks did? Fairbanks was a supply hub. It had that going for it. It incorporated. You had churches, you had businesses, you had social clubs. But what you also have to have for a community to have staying power is you have to have economic development. And there are two kinds of economic injections into your local economy, and they come from the outside and they come from within. And outside sources are capital investments, grants. You know, you have outside businesses that come in. And if you look at today's terms, a lot of our tour companies, that's outside investment. You look at the military, that's outside investment. You look at grant money, community grants, mm-hmm. that's outside investment. It's outside money coming into the community. And some of that outside investment also leaves.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, money filters through, but it doesn't necessarily stay. The best kind that you can have is from inside sources where the money ultimately stays in the community. And so gold mining was something that had development of gold mining when you're hand mining. That's an inside development. There was a little bit of outside money involved, but generally the money was spent and then the product was exported to the States. But the profits went to Alaskans
mm-hmm.
and went to the community. We processed the ore. We prepared the ore for shipping and all of that. Well, in Alaska, there were several natural resources. You had timber, you had fishing, you had mining. But also, agriculture was a big, big thing that was promoted because you had all these people showing up and they needed food. And bringing food in on the all-water route from, you know, you go up the Inside Passage across the Gulf and you go through the Aleutians all the way up through Bristol Bay and you come up to the mouth of the Yukon. And then you come up the Yukon, up the Tanana, all the way to Chino. What kind of quality food are you going to have?
Not very good quality.
And what's the cost?
Can't wait to see those eggs.
And what's the cost?
Heavy.
Yeah. And so it was really, you know, smart to grow produce. And right away.
The staple of everything, wheat.
Right away, you know, agriculture was a big thing in the Tanana Valley. And we're fortunate here. We have a great climate
mm-hmm.
for growing.
You know, it was a school of mines and agriculture.
Yes.
College Alaska.
Yes. One of the first things when the Tanana Valley Railroad opened, Falcon Jocelyn took Georgeson. The Georgeson Botanical Gardens, mm-hmm. where they're located today. He rode to Chino with Falcon Jocelyn to select a site for an experimental station. And right there where those gardens are, that's the site that they selected.
Wow.
Yes. And that was in 1905. And so this burgeoning agricultural industry, and you had the Rickert Farms, which were out on South Cushman area.
Mm-hmm.
You had the Binkley Dairy. You had the Creamer's Dairy. You had the Hinckley's Dairy. Garden Island was called Garden Island, which is the north side of the Chena River.
Because they were growing food. And the north side, the south side of the Noy Slough.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an island upon itself, and it was a breadbasket.
Right. And over these early years...
I live on Garden Island.
You do?
Yeah.
And over these early years, this agriculture grew exponentially. And by 1914, it was spreading out to the area of Farmers Loop Road.
Mm-hmm.
And the road was built the winter, or 1914/15. So over those 2 years, Farmers Loop Road was built because they were growing mostly grain out there, hay and grain. And we had a lot of horses. We were very horse dependent. We needed a lot of hay.
Horsepower.
Yes. So we had this local need that developed the agricultural capabilities here in the Tanana Valley. And it was really amazing because you wouldn't think Fairbanks is a place where you could really have a lot of agriculture, but it turned out, yes, you can. So the big question is, why don't we do it today? And we're going to get to that at the end.
Right now, we're going to get to a break in our action here. Fairbanks, if you have any questions for Joni, we're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. And we got a 2-minute fishing report coming up.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
It's time for the Valdez Fishing Report. Interviews, derby standings, tips, and advice for Prince William Sound.
This is Barrett McCombie with an update on fishing in Valdez. Jen Saxon of Valdez, Alaska is currently leading the Valdez Silver Salmon Derby with an 11.34-pound silver salmon. Sue Bless of Fairbanks, Alaska is currently in second place with an 11.02-pound silver, and Jerry Bender is currently in third place overall with an 11.00-pound silver salmon. The Big Prize Friday winner is Sue Bless of Fairbanks, Alaska with an 11.02-pound silver salmon. Bless won $500 cash in addition to the daily prize package worth about $400. There are a few reports of silvers being caught in the port, but most are starting to get picked up outside of Valdez towards Glacier Island. In the Valdez Halibut Derby, the leading fish is a 252-pound halibut caught by Jim Jack of Lacey, Washington. Troy Dolge of Copper Center, Alaska is currently in second place with a 203-pound halibut. And Maren Russman of Earhart, Minnesota is hanging on to third place overall with a 195.4-pound flatfish she caught on July 26th. Anglers are also hooked in a trophy-sized lingcod and rockfish. The silver salmon fishing should be excellent for the Valdez Women's Silver Salmon Derby August 12th. Valdez Fish Derbies will give cash prizes to the women catching the three biggest fish. Registration is going to be at the Valdez Prospector August 9th through the 12th. Derby anglers purchase a ticket for the regular derby in addition to a $30 fee for the women's derby. Visit ValdezFishDerbies.com for more information.
Call Fish Central and get out on the water to catch fish and fill your freezer this summer. Fish Central can hook you up with charter reservations or a boat rental and give you the advice you need to navigate the local waters. Once you've caught your limit, bring it in for processing. Visit FishCentral.net or call 835-5002 to book your fishing adventure today.
KVAK's Valdez Fishing Report. Fish Valdez and reel in a big one.
KFAR Weather.
Partly cloudy skies today with highs around 81. Southwest winds around 5 miles per hour. Lows level off around 56. Tonight, partly cloudy. Mainly cloudy skies expected tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 81. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Friday with daytime highs approaching 83. 89 Saturday. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I'm Joni Skillbred in the studio with me. How you doing, Joni?
I'm fabulous.
We're talking a combination of both history and economics with agriculture and wheat in Fairbanks.
Yes.
The farming community, how it stretched out, Farmers Loop, Rickard Subdivision, where Fort Wainwright is now.
Yes.
Yeah. Brant Subdivision, where I live, that started out as a part of Garden Island, then went to the Brant Farm, then went to Brant Homestead, their 160 acres, and Brant Subdivision, so...
Yes. And, you know, you grow in the summer, the gardens, you know, you grow cabbages, potatoes.
The roots.
All of that.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk
root cellar.
Flour.
Yeah. The staple of all.
We're going to talk wheat. What? And to have wheat, you can grow wheat. It was found that they imported Russian varieties of wheat, Siberian wheat.
Mm-hmm.
And they did some hybridization and They came up with their own local varieties that were doing really, really well. And this is hard winter wheat. And hard wheat has a real high protein content. So they developed these varieties of wheat that would grow here. Now you've got the wheat, but...
Don't have a mill.
You don't have a mill. So the first guy orders a mill, and this mill was like a small hand one. It was ordered by Magnus Nelson. He was a local farmer. And, you know, you can buy those today, and they clamp onto the counter, and you grind, you know. And you can only, you're not going to grind a real high-quality product.
And you can only grind so much.
Yeah. And it is a lot of work. And you know, you can say, okay, we'll make the kids turn the mill, which you can do that, but you have to have a lot of kids, which means you have to have even more flour to feed them.
You're going to go over to the Fairbanks School and gym day, you know, gym hour.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're going to get a really coarse grind off of that. You're not really going to get a real high-quality product. But he had the first one here, and it was a big deal. And so he turned out some, and he sold it to a bakery in September 1917. One of the local bakeries bragged that it had its first loaf for sale of
homemade
Tanana Valley
wheat.
And that was kind of a really, you know, that was a big deal for Fairbanks. Now, this is 1917. And of course, you know, it's like, well, yeah, we should all be eating this. It's going to taste way better. It's fresh, you know, all of that. But we need better equipment. Well, that costs money. And to have better equipment also, you know, involves a little more infrastructure. You know, where are you going to set this mill up? It's not going to clamp to somebody's kitchen counter.
No, there's a building now.
Yes, yes.
So you have delivery of wheat and distribution of product.
And you're going to have it a power generation for it. So this is a little more complicated. And fortunately, one of the things that helped along local support to invest in getting a decent mill was World War I, because all of a sudden there were shortages and rationing, and, you know, and it's like, oh my gosh, well, but we got this right here. If we get a mill, you know, we don't have rationing.
Yeah.
You know, we can help the troops if we export some of our flour. So World War I really helped us, the agricultural end of things, especially wheat growing here in the interior. And so another mill shows up. It wasn't, you know, but a year or so later. And this mill was purchased for the ag station out there at the university. But it could no way, it was still a very small electric mill, and it just could not produce a high quality flour. You got to have a full size mill to do that. And, you know, they were generating the demand in the community, and it couldn't keep up with the demand. So the Tanana Valley Agricultural Association was formed, and it was a group of the farmers and other interested individuals. And they decided, okay, we're going to do this on a two-pronged way. And I thought it was really smart what they did. So they applied for some grant money from the federal government, but they knew that may or may not happen. In the meantime, they started selling shares of stock in a full-blown flour mill for Fairbanks, with the idea that not only would we supply Fairbanks, but we would supply other
communities,
places as well.
Yeah.
We could supply all of Alaska. Why not? You know, they like to think big. And so they sold shares of stock, and they got the money. The first, so they purchased a mill, they put the down payment on it, and it was late. And they canceled the order. And they went with this other company who could deliver on time, because they needed to get it
going.
You know, they had commitments to buy grain. They had already had contracts to buy grain from local farmers, and they needed the mill running to process that grain.
And the farmers needed a contract so they could clear and grow.
Yes, you don't want to be building extra warehouses.
No.
You know, so you have to keep this whole process going. If anything stops in that process, it causes, it's like a chain reaction of trouble. So they got the mill here, and they set it up, and it was set up over by where the News Miner is today. And it was a two-story.
Garden Island.
Yes. It was a two-story building, and they had a problem with getting through the hard pan. They had to drill a certain a higher capacity kind of well,
mm-hmm.
and they had trouble doing that, but they got the well drilled. They sold stock like crazy all over town. As near as I can tell, they never got any subsidies from the government on this. This was all locally produced, and they put that, the total cost of putting that mill in was $18,000 in 1923 money, so 100 years ago. So add a couple zeros to that, you know, and that mm-hmm. was all local money that went
into
it.
With a very small population.
With a very small population. So they got the mill built, and they got it up and running. And now you have to, in order to keep this going, you have the novelty of it initially,
mm-hmm.
but you also have to keep it going.
And now you have the business of it.
Now you have the business of it. So they had, the business was called, or the brand was Golden North. And they had a contest. So you had basically, initially, they produced two kinds of flour. They produced a whole wheat flour, and then they produced another kind of flour that was a white flour. And so they had a contest locally for, you have to put this flour in sacks.
Mm-hmm.
And you have an emblem on the sack. And so John Kelly won the first part, so he won the whole wheat one, and it was a golden heart. And he was also the guy who did the golden heart logo for the commercial club, and we still use that today.
And what was his name?
John Kelly.
John Kelly was the inventor
of the golden heart.
Okay.
Yes, and
wow.
It was a golden heart, and it said Fairbanks, Alaska. There's a soft spot in it for you.
Yeah, now it's a Golden Heart City.
And they use that with stickers as an advertising to get tourists and investments in Alaska. And you can still buy those stickers. The Women's Igloo of the Pioneers of Alaska, of which I'm president, we own the dye.
You own the dye on that?
Yes, and you can buy those stickers at the Kitty Hensley House.
Nothing like a plug of business for
well,
you,
sure.
Of course.
I'm shameless. So going back, he designed a heart logo for the whole wheat. And then William Betzler, who is really, he's a noted artist in Fairbanks for pyrography.
Mm-hmm.
He did a lot of, pyrography is like wood burning, only you do it on moose hide. And he did some pretty fantastic moose hides. And you can see some of those at Pioneer Museum in Pioneer Park. But his logo was,
you know, You're going to be catching up with Craig Compost here.
His logo was the Midnight Sun.
Oh, boy.
Okay. And so we had the Midnight Sun, and we had the Golden Heart. And the Midnight Sun represented the white flower kind. And the mill got up and running, and everything was good for a little while.
Well, hold on. Let's stop there.
We're going to take our break?
Yeah, we're going to stop for everything okay. was good for a little while. Then, you know, business went a little bit south.
Okay.
Fairbanks, you're going to hear some Phil Collins bumper music, Don't Lose My Whatever, and that's probably from, I would say that was installed by Glenner. Then we're going to have some Fox News, some state news, some commercials, some weather, and we'll be back.
We'll be right back.
more Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
A gunman stormed a synagogue in the heart of Pittsburgh's Jewish community, killed 11 worshipers, will be sentenced to death. A federal jury recommending Wednesday this 50-year-old male be sent to death row for the deadliest anti-Semitic attack in U.S. history. Former President Donald Trump's facing four new charges related to his alleged efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election. And we're getting reaction today from Florida Republican Congressman Carlos Jimenez on the Fox Business Network. He thinks the Justice Department and FBI are politically weaponized.
If they continue to act in this fashion, it just proves our point that, unfortunately, these two agencies, these two institutions have been weaponized.
And a man accused of attacking the husband of Nancy Pelosi with a hammer in October, due in court today. This 42-year-old is facing kidnapping and assault charges. America is listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
Alaska's news source reports with a pool of federal dollars flooding into Alaska, the Alaska Marine Highway System is looking to address its aging fleet as part of its 20-year plan. Marine Director Craig Tornga said AMHS is looking to upgrade more than half of its fleet as part of the 20-year plan, with three new vessels coming online in the next 4 to 5 years. There's nine vessels in the fleet, and five of those vessels are over 45 years old. Standardly, you don't operate vessels past the 25 to 30-year mark, Tornga said. He said the plan seeks to replace the aging Testamina, which is nearly 60 years old, with a diesel battery-powered hybrid ferry. The plan also calls for the Lituya to be replaced with an electric-powered ferry. In addition, the plan calls for the Matanuska and Columbia to be replaced, Tornga said. The Aurora and LeConte will likely be replaced in the 2031 range. He said the first phase of the draft plan is set to be shared with the Alaska legislature in August. Tornga said the plan will be mostly funded through federal dollars.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
Spend your Saturdays with KFAR Radio for local programs, starting with Alaska Realty Today from Next Home Arctic Sun Realty at 11 a.m. The Buzz at 11:30, brought to you by the Tanana Herb Company, followed by Health Talk with Dr. Scott Looper from White Spruce Medical at noon. And then it's the Compos Outdoor Show at 12:30, Fairbanks Foodies at 1 p.m., and Explore Fairbanks at 1:30. All 3 hours of local shows can be found on the KFAR website in the archives section. Weekends just got local with KFAR Radio.
Now listen to me when I tell you this, because I mean it sincerely. Punctuality is among the highest forms of respect you can bestow upon someone. I believe that. Otherwise, who'd bother having a clock? One of them computers. We're obsessed with time, as am I. A humble septic tank who pushes back against tardiness. Respect flows two ways. My family has Bigfoot Pumpin' and Thorn pump me out with punctuality once a year, and I continue to serve them much better.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back in the studio with Joni Skillbrand. We're talking about the first wheat mill.
Yes.
That got set up and it's starting to produce, and
they called it a flouring mill.
Flouring mill.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, which I thought was kind of interesting.
You know, when I use the term interesting as a real estate broker, that is not good.
Oh, well.
That's an interesting building. That's an interesting lease.
It's eclectic.
Yeah, that's an interesting top of water on your property.
Well, I just thought that, you know, flowering.
Yeah.
You know, when in the South, they have grist mills,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they grind grain.
Mm-hmm.
But this one was specifically for wheat, so it was called a flouring mill. And, you know, I had never seen that term before. I don't know if that was strictly just, I didn't even think to look at that. Was that really, I'll have to do it when I get home. Is that just a local term, or was that a...
You tell us when you find out, yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, they got the mill up and running. And so, through the 20s, it ran. And it did pretty good. But the business of milling is you have to keep demand up. So when you run a mill, you're purchasing grain from farmers, which you cut those contracts kind of in advance. They're going to agree in advance to supply you with X amount of grain, and in return, you're going to supply them with X amount of money.
Yeah.
So you've already committed to that. Now the grain's getting delivered, and you have to mill it into the product, and then you have to get that product sold, and you have to keep that product moving through so that you can have enough cash flow to get more contracts. So the whole circle has to keep going. Well, in the case of running a flour mill, first of all, a lot of it's kind of seasonal. So you've got big outlays of cash, and you're, you know, by the time milling time comes, you're cash poor.
It sounds just like a mining operation.
It does. You're cash poor. And so you've got to get that demand up because you've got to have that injection of cash ASAP. Mm-hmm. Anybody that runs a seasonal business knows this. Boy, don't I know it. So to drum up, they were coming up with ways to drum up demand, and they had this really cool contest in the mid-1920s where they did it. They promoted it. W.F. Thompson was really great for promoting the agricultural industry in Fairbanks, and he really went over the top to promote this contest, and it was to showcase locally grown wheat, our flour products, with locally grown wheat, and you had to bake bread using Healy coal.
Ooh,
as your heat source.
Yeah, wow.
Because they were promoting switching over to coal. So you would be supplied with wheat and with coal. And they had all these prizes, you know, to give out that people had donated and everything. And it was to get everybody to try baking bread and using coal, baking bread with locally produced flour. And it was pretty successful. But eventually, you know, you have equipment failures, breakdowns, everything else. Or I should say before that happened, before they had the slowdown, they sold a couple carloads of Fairbanks produced flour to Anchorage. And that was a big feather in this milling operations cap.
Yeah.
So one of the things that they had that was a huge problem was insurance.
Ooh.
Now, you know, I don't know how many people know how volatile flour is. It's downright explosive. And we have a dry environment, you know, where you have static electricity and everything else.
That's called an arc to a spark.
Yeah. So one of the challenges was insurance on this operation. And, you know, as a business person, it's not illegal to run a business without insurance, but it's not very smart, you know. And so that was another cost factor. To get insurance for a flour mill is very expensive because there's a high rate of volatility with that. And that was a huge challenge because they have to be competitive with the imported product. By the time you get to the late 20s, the Alaska Railroad is in place and is bringing stuff in by the train car full from the lower 48. And they're having to compete with those. No longer do you have the long boat ride and, you know, the ridiculous prices. It was easy to compete with the boat products, but not so easy to compete with the railroad products. So between the cost of the insurance and the cost of trying to compete, they had a slowdown in demand. And eventually they closed the mill for a few years. And then there was a resurgence because World War II's looming up. You know, all of a sudden everybody's going, okay, you know. There was also a resurgence in the A lot of the guys.
So they never dismantled the mill.
No, it just sat unused for several years.
Okay.
And so also a lot of the people who were the main agricultural people who were doing all the growing and all the business of the agriculture were starting to get older.
Yeah.
You know, the wheat growers were getting older, but now you got a new group that's coming in. And so let's see if we can get this going again. Another war is looming up on the horizon, which means shortages and rationings, which is great for a flour mill. And mm-hmm. they all remembered what happened during World War I. So, you know, it's like, okay, let's see if we can get this going again. And they did in the 30s. And they got it going again. And they had some limited successes with it. But it wasn't ever to the extent that it was initially, you know, 10, 15 years prior. And a lot of that had to do with there just weren't enough people growing. You know, there wasn't enough interest in growing. I mean, farming is hard, hard work. And, you know, with the influx of military jobs that came along in the 30s, you know, they were building up the military stuff here. The mm-hmm. beginnings of Ladd Air Force Base was built in the 30s. You know, it's hard to compete. So the mill ended up closing, and they tried opening it again in the 40s. And the heater in there overheated things, and it burned down. And there was no insurance.
Oh.
And that was the end of our flour mill, which was really sad. It was a huge loss.
Yeah.
For Fairbanks.
Oh.
Which made us reliant on imported flour.
So that had the effect of putting the wheat farmers out of business.
Out of business, totally. So in order to start milling flour again, you have to grow it from the ground up.
Yeah.
And that's very difficult to do when you're competing with corporate box store imported flour.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I just thought of a question I'm going to ask Joni. We'll see if we stump Joni. Back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
With summertime comes those epic family adventures. Last thing you need are car troubles leaving you on the side of the highway. So make sure everything is running smoothly. Just swing your car or truck by Pearson Auto. From your AC to your radiator, to your fluid levels, belts, and battery. Crew at Pearson's will make sure your next summer adventure doesn't come with any surprises. Well, almost no surprises. That's Pearson Auto off the Rich Highway and on Airport across from Pikes. Pearson Automotive, your dealership alternative.
Setting up camp is some of the hardest work in hunting. Doing it right makes all the difference. Start with Frontier Outfitters for great selections of tents, wall tents, and tent wood stoves. See every kind of cookware and stoves by MSR, Jetboil, and Coleman. Sleeping bags by Slumberjack and Mountain Hardware. Thermarest mattresses. To help transport it, Frontier has ATV accessories and trailers. Everything for your successful hunt. Gear, clothing, the finest knives, and more are at Frontier Outfitters today. Frontier Outfitters for your Alaskan life. Style.
KFAR weather.
Partly cloudy skies today with daytime highs approaching 81. Southwesterly winds around 5 miles per hour. Partly cloudy skies again tonight. Lows dip down to about 56. Cloudy skies with a few peaks of sun tomorrow. Highs level off around 81. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. And we're going to conclude this section here with
the moral of the story.
The moral of the story.
Well, today we have one small flour mill in Delta. in 2012. It was purchased, and it processes barley flour, and we don't grow wheat. There was an effort with the pipeline money to support agriculture, but didn't go anywhere. There wasn't a lot of public support for it. And so we're back to where we were before the flour mill arrived in Fairbanks. We are totally dependent on this supply chain from outside.
Strike in Seattle.
One thread.
Yep.
It's one thread. There were two barges, and then we were down to one, and I don't know if we got two barges that come north now or not, but it's not more than two. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think that our grocery stores have these big warehouses. Nope. They do not.
We used to have the hub and place that would store for the stores, and they don't have that anymore.
Well, they have to pay. The consumer expects such low prices, and it's so competitive in the grocery market. To have a warehouse, you have to pay the heating, the lighting, the insurance, on top of getting the goods here. And you have to pay the taxes.
Yep.
So there you go. So, we all want cheaper food, and we want bottom barrel prices, and we're going to ultimately pay in the long term for it. So there's no food storage, and we have the food bank, but the food bank supplies
homeless.
The homeless.
Yeah.
The needy. I shouldn't say homeless. Yes,
the needy.
There's a certain segment of the community that they supply, but there, you know what happens? They're not going to be able to supply everybody, and those people aren't going to get supplied anymore either. And we're all going to go hungry. And some of us have food that we keep, Alaskans are pretty good, but you're not going to go much longer than a month.
Yeah.
And a big event, they're not going to be able to fly enough food in, and we should be supporting and investing in taking care of ourselves instead of always looking to somebody else.
You know, I was out at the Tanana Valley Fair on Wednesday, and I was very surprised by the amount of farms that we now have. So it's little by little, and I mean...
can grow wheat!
Yeah, but I was very surprised by the amount of farms that we have. And so it's not enough to, take care of what you're talking about.
We can grow wheat. It's been proven, and we can mill wheat. We need to have a mill that will mill a high quality product, but we've got the raw materials here. We can grow it, but we have to decide to support it, and that's the lesson.
Yeah.
So you had a question.
Yes.
I'm cringing.
Well, where was the mill located?
It was where the People's Warehouse was. They bought that property.
Where was the People's Warehouse?
It was over near where the Newsminer sits today.
Okay. What used to be over there near where the Newsminer sits today?
Oh, well, there was lots of things. The depot, the railroad depot.
You're getting close.
And the brewery.
You're getting cooler.
Samson's Hardware?
No. The bunkers.
Oh, yes, the coal bunkers, yes.
Where's the structure of the bunkers at now, the coal bunkers? Where's that at? They took it down. Mm-hmm. It sat there in a big pile for a few years on railroad property. They finally said, okay, you friends of the coal bunkers, you're going to do something with this.
Well, they raised a bunch of money to do something with it, but in the end, it fizzled.
So where are...
I did some research on that.
I know you did. That's why I'm
guy,
getting the question on the air.
There was a guy who did fancy woodworking, and he got a bunch of the wood, and it's in some people's houses around town that paid him for custom work, staircases and such. But that's the last that
I
can see.
There was no big pile that was brought out to...
No.
In case we're ever going to rebuild coal bunkers.
Not going to rebuild them, despite all the promises and despite all the, the promoting and everything else.
And
they're gone.
And we can't lose this national, this local historic site, and we got to preserve it.
Yeah. Well, you know, my father always said that stories last forever, but buildings do not. And here in Fairbanks, it seems like a lot of our history we put in the landfill. You know, it's really sad. We should appreciate it more. And we're losing a lot of it very quickly these days. And people, you know, they're just not interested in preserving it. It's really kind of too bad.
It takes time, effort, and money. It
takes money. Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. It takes money, mostly.
So what are you looking at for down the road? Different stories, different products, different thoughts.
Oh, well, I was thinking I want to do another crime show because I like crime.
The whodunits.
Yes, you know, that would be a lot of fun to do. And I'm working on a big crime thing. I'm doing an Ollie class this fall. And I'm doing a big presentation on a robbery that occurred in early day Fairbanks. It was pretty shocking.
Really?
Oh, yes. Yes. It's a gold heist. And then I'll do it. I'll do it again later on at the Mining Hall of Fame Museum, too.
I enjoyed that one presentation you made. Oh, we got phones lining up for you there.
Okay.
Good morning. You're on Problem Corner with Joni Sklobred. Your name is?
Hey, this is Craig Campo, Dave.
She's not as good as you, Craig, but she's getting there.
Yeah. No, I had a question for Joni. She's got working on a crime. I don't know if she's done a story on the Cecil Mills murder from years ago.
No, somebody else did that. I'm not interested.
Oh, you're not? Okay. I thought it was interesting.
It's a good story, but somebody else did it.
Yeah, someone else did it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well.
Did you hear her chiming in for the Kitty Hensley house? You know. She was taken after you, Craig Campo.
Yeah.
Okay, buddy. Talk to you later. Bye. Good morning. You're on KFAR Radio with Joni Sklobred, and your name is?
Randy.
Hello, Randy.
Yeah, it's sad how some historical things like the coal bunkers went away, in spite of strong efforts to try to save it. I do hope they can save the riverboat in Nana. No hope on that. But I have some happy news, speaking of history. I've been following the newspaper for the 100 years ago section on the second page of the Newsminer that they have regularly, and I was watching in the past few weeks, you know, 100 years ago, that is, President Harding, the first president coming that ever came to Alaska, you know, driving the Golden Strike in Nana, and then as time went on, you know, he toured Alaska, and then he got on a ship and heading home to the lower 48, and but this last Monday, but he kind of was under the weather some. And this last Monday, on July 31st, in the Newsminer, they had a kind of a happy, hopeful article about him. It said that Harding passed the best night comparatively since he has been ill. Statement continued, this augurs well. Conditions seem to warrant a statement that he has gotten into clear sailing, and it gives some of his vital signs, his temperature is 100 and so forth. But anyway, it's kind of a hopeful thing, and it makes me happy to hear that he may be coming out of it.
Okay.
You know, I've often wondered, it's interesting you brought that up, I've often wondered, after he toured here, and he died before he got back home, and I've often wondered if he wouldn't have died, how that would have affected things here in Alaska, and particularly in Fairbanks, because when he died, you know, that was a promotional to show him the need for the federal government to fund things here. And that effort died with him.
I'm sorry to hear you say that. Are you saying that he passed away shortly after this July 31st? And,
Yeah,
he did. He died on the way home of food poisoning.
We hate to break the few next stories to you in regards to that, but yeah, he died in San Francisco, I believe.
Yes, and another bit of shameless promotion. You know, the Pioneers of Alaska were very much a part of his visit here in the interior.
She's getting good, Craig.
And they were central in the driving of the Golden Spike, and they were given the place of honor when he was here in Fairbanks. Mm-hmm. And the members of the Pioneers were the ones who took him all over town and showed him everything. And, you know, the purpose of his visit here was to get him to understand the need of federal support and funding for our growing community. And, you know, it was a very successful visit. However, he died.
Yes.
And I think that it had an impact on what happened here.
Well, I was in a good mood and kind of happy and hopeful. But
sorry.
Oh, she's a downer, isn't she? Thanks for the phone call, Randy. And you dream crusher.
Oh,
Randy. You gave him the final chapter when he was about two-thirds of the way through the book.
Yeah, well, it was really sad, and everybody was shocked by that.
What did he die from?
Food poisoning.
Food poisoning.
That was what they decided that he died from, yes.
Where do you get the food at? Anchorage?
Well, it wasn't here.
Seward or on
I think
the boat?
It was probably on the boat.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, really too bad. And he was the only president. How many years was it? It was, it was in the 80s. Ronald Reagan came here. He's the only other president that's ever come to Fairbanks. Because Reagan met the Pope in like 1984.
Yep.
At the
airport.
At the airport. Yes. And where's the carpet that he stood on?
I'm sure the Pioneers have it.
No.
No?
No.
University?
The Howling Dog Saloon. It's the stage carpet. The
how
Pope and the President.
How apropos.
I just love that.
It was pretty funny because he had these jerseys and shirts running around where Johnny meets Ronnie and the Pope and the Dope. You know, just only in Fairbanks can you go that direction.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but that was the only other time that a president visited Fairbanks.
So what other thoughts are you looking at? You know, whenever I decide to cook something, before I decide to cook it, I got to get my chi. I got to get my inspiration going. I got to, you know, something has to strike me. Say, okay, do this and you'll enjoy it. What are you looking at for shows on Fairbanks here?
Oh my gosh, you just put me on the spot.
I do that.
I don't, you know.
Come on, suck it up.
There's a lot of interesting stuff. You know, I don't always know right away what I'm going to do because I start with one thing and then I see something else and I go down that rabbit hole.
Exactly, yeah.
But for sure, infrastructure, because I just am fascinated with that. How did we build the city that we have?
Mm-hmm.
You know, telephone lines are something that I've been working on for a while. We had an unbelievable number of them. I mean, shocking.
Yeah, I know. You see the old photos, you know, just go, wow.
Yes. And I've kind of been working on that. You know, communications, we had the phone system. And these lines carried power and phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been kind of working on something with that and the evolution of our telephone system, you know, all the way past when we got this influx for the pipeline and it overwhelmed us.
Yeah, our phone number was 64743, then the pipeline hits. You have to go 456-4743.
We were on a 10-person party line.
We had a party line, too, until my sister became a teenager. And, you know, she went to junior high, and that's when, you know, Maine, and all of a sudden, no one in about three houses was on the phone. Just my sister. That's when Dad changed it.
Another one that I'm working on is the Steese Highway, when they built the new Steese to Fox, because I've been working on the research for that, and that's going to be an upcoming show. You know, there was a lot of truck traffic on the winding. If you drive the old Steese, you know, you had to drive in and out of all those trucks hauling pipe, and then the haul road.
Joni, thank you so much for
You're welcome.
Your show. Always great. Fairbanks, I will see you on Friday. You have a great day.